Hello, everybody. Today we have an art director here who is going to reveal industry secrets. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need for art prof: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. So we're talking today with Ashley Browning, who is a seasoned art director, and she is going to answer all your questions that you have been dying to get answers for. So we're going to start with my questions. From a selfish point of view, I want to know these things as well. So the first thing I think of is how to get the jobs, which, number one, you have to get in touch with an art director and to know who to call and how to communicate that. That whole getting your foot in the door thing is very confusing for a lot of people. So for somebody who has no idea who to email, who to whatever, what is your advice for that, getting your foot in the door?
So there are a few ways to get your foot in the door. Of course, easiest way is having someone being able to vouch for you. So I know that's not the best way for people who are literally trying, but if you happen to know someone who works in the industry, kind of keeping your stuff in front of them would help. Sometimes cold calling can work. Finding people on LinkedIn, connecting with them, and keeping up a good rapport will help. But there are also things like the headhunter agencies, basically. And there are several big ones. There's Creative Circle and Onward Search, where they'll have a middleman who you can submit your portfolio. You basically do an interview with them and they'll look for jobs that would be a good fit for you.
Is a headhunter the same thing as getting an agent?
No, not exactly, because you're not paying the agent. You're not responsible for that. They only get paid the agency, the creative headhunter agency, if you are on site doing work. So they get basically a percentage of your salary. And honestly, how much they're getting is kind of under wraps. So they'll negotiate with the actual company, and you only know what they're willing to give you through the company. But it's a good way to get your foot in the door. And sometimes you can get recommended to jobs that aren't even posted anywhere.
I just always assume you just cold call, you get on a list, and they call you. But you're saying there's actually multiple ways to communicate and to be more proactive about taking a job.
Yeah, there are, definitely.
And what about if you cold call, which I did, and I got, 5 really good replies out of, 150 emails or something crazy like that. And I consider that a win, that I got more than one reply. When do I follow up again? Because my portfolio, I haven't changed it that much. I think I only have one or two new pieces. When is it not too aggressive, but also not too long of a period that, they've forgotten about me entirely?
I would say maybe between every 3 to 6 months. It honestly just depends, how favorable were their responses? Because, people get busy, they'll forget. So just kind of pinging them every 3 to 6 months, I'd say. That way you're not coming off as annoying or anything.
So everybody, put into the chat any questions you have for Ashley about the industry. And this is not just illustration. We're also talking about graphic design, which is a huge part of this. So any of you guys who have interest in graphic design or tips for how to get started learning it, we can also talk about that as well. So throw your questions in there and we will get to them. So the other question I have is, there's multiple ways to interact with an art director. So we talked about LinkedIn as being a good place to find people, because I know I just looked up the agency, the advertising agency, and I just saw their employee listing and I saw, do they have a website? And then I would click on their email that's on their website if they had it. And so that was a good way for me to make a list. But the thing is, a lot of them are on Instagram. So what's the difference between a cold call email, an Instagram DM, an Instagram comment, and is Instagram even a professional way to do it?
In my opinion, Instagram is not the most professional way to go about it. I think if you're going to be contacting someone through an app and not through email, like LinkedIn would be your better bet, because when you're on LinkedIn, that's like a professional mindset. That is people's work and all that. Instagram still at its base level, considering like, or in relation to like professional work, it's still, in my opinion, a social media platform. So maybe you might get a good, you know, hit off of there, but I would definitely not use that as my first like line of what you're trying to do.
I have been stalking them though.
Oh yeah, that's totally fine. Stalk away.
I was very proud of myself that through intelligent comments beyond, hey, cool, or an emoji, I would write something intelligent. I'd say, oh, I really appreciate the organization of this composition, that red really stands out, something like that. That's intelligent. And once you've done that a few times, they notice you. And I've gotten a bunch of art directors to follow me. So do you think that is an appropriate way? Because visibility seems so important. I mean, they must have lists of illustrators and they just forget about you.
It just depends. I think if you're hitting them up on multiple channels, basically, then yes, Instagram can be a useful thing, but I wouldn't do that primarily, if that makes sense.
Okay. So that's almost a supplement to the portfolio submission.
Yes. Yes.
We have a question from Karasu, who's saying, how necessary is art school to break into the industry? What are the pros and cons?
In, I guess my question is like, which industry would it be? Illustration, graphic design? I guess for illustration, actually for both, I think art school is pretty important. I know specifically for graphic design, I've never hired anyone who didn't have a degree in art in some form or fashion or marketing. It's just, you're not going to get past the basically hiring algorithm without that degree on your resume. And in some cases, it can extend to illustrators as well. Like without having that base level degree, they won't even look at you. They won't take you seriously. Unfortunately, it's just kind of a bar to entry kind of thing.
What about if you've got an amazing portfolio and you don't have any degree? Does that sort of change things? Or is it like, no, we won't even look?
I would say it is rare for them to even look at your portfolio, because they're going to look at your resume first. They're never going to look at your portfolio first.
Really?
Yes. So if you do not have a good resume, they won't even open your portfolio.
Wait, but when I cold called, I didn't send my resume. Is that bad?
I would send your resume.
Yeah. Oh my God. I thought it was just the portfolio.
No, they want to see both. They want to see both.
Oh my God. I did not know this. But here's the thing though. My resume, first of all, it's 8 pages long because it's a curriculum vitae. Do I take out all my fine art gallery stuff, or do they really want to see all that stuff? Because it's not relevant, the gallery stuff.
I might leave it in, because if you're going specifically for illustration, like having that like backup that you've been like shown in a gallery, like that could like tip the scales in your favor kind of thing.
I'm such an idiot. I didn't say oh my God, I'm so dumb. But see, here's the thing. Where would somebody have told me to do that if I didn't already know you or know other artists who have done it?
Yeah.
It's really not fair if you think about it, because even the educational part, that already plugs you into a network of people. And so somebody who has no art school degree and no artist friends, I mean, that sounds almost impossible to break in.
It would be very difficult to break in. I wouldn't say impossible. And then there's always freelance. Like, if you're like the business yourself and you're going to like smaller businesses to do work, there's going to be a lower bar of entry. But if like you're trying to like shoot for the stars and work for like Fortune 500 companies, it'll be much harder to break into that.
So maybe a solution would be not to aim so high, to try to tackle smaller gigs and smaller places.
Yes. Yes.
All right. We have a question from 7A. Are there any resources you'd recommend for learning design if formal education is not an option?
I think that we uploaded some resources on our...
I didn't. I have to do it. I will. Well, I will.
I gave Claire a list of a few websites. I would look at any sort of, I guess, tutorials that Adobe puts out, because Adobe is our like industry standard when it comes to design and illustration, like digitally in the field. So anything that Adobe puts out, I would go through that. Our field also has a professional association, the AI, I think it's AIGA. They also have like some learning resources there. If you are a member, like if you buy a membership, you can have access to even more resources. They only have a few like free resources though. So those would be my two like go-to to learn.
What about software? Because I am realizing, oh my gosh, you need to learn this stuff, because I've always learned Photoshop on a need to know basis. I don't feel that I have a comprehensive grounding to pull from. And so I'm feeling really out of my element learning this stuff. And so what softwares are important? Because I know a lot of people can't afford Photoshop. It's expensive, the Creative Suite, and it's a subscription model now.
Yep.
And of course we have Procreate, which is way, way cheaper. Does it matter what software you use, say, to make the art? But also when you work with the art director, I'm assuming you have to use the same software.
Yes. So software does matter. Adobe Suite is the industry standard. There's no way to get around it. If you are working professionally in the field, you are expected to have Adobe. If you're working through like a company, they'll probably give you access to Adobe. So it's not going to be on your own dime. But if you're purely a freelancer, you're going to be responsible for that cost. So, I mean, it kind of like ranges specifically the different like programs within Adobe Suite versus whether you're doing print or digital media. So like print media, you would probably be using like Photoshop and Illustrator. But in addition to that, you'd also be using InDesign, which is like a page layout thing. And if you're doing digital, obviously Photoshop, Illustrator is kind of like the go-to. But then also if you're doing web work, Dreamweaver can be like the standard there. So Adobe Suite, like all the way, there's no way to get around it.
That's a lot of software. All right. For me, for an Illustrator side, of course, Photoshop. But I've always been scared to learn Illustrator. Can I get away without that? Or should I just buckle down and learn it?
I think if you don't learn it, you're going to kind of back yourself into a corner. Like you're going to have a very niche thing that you can do. And if you're okay with that, then that's fine. But, you know, those kind of like vector graphics are, unfortunately, they're in right now. Oh. And so learning that would open up more doors, but I wouldn't say it's like necessary, if you know what I mean.
I guess I'm worried I will get in a situation where somebody expects me to know how to do something and I don't know how to do it and I'm paralyzed and I don't want to ask for help because I don't want to sound like a moron.
I mean, this is also kind of the place where your resume would help, because usually you'll list the programs that you know how to use. on your resume so that if you don't list Illustrator, they're not going to, hopefully they won't overlook that and they won't expect you to be able to use Illustrator.
Okay, I feel like a noob. I mean, I am a noob. I'm not saying I'm not, but the more I talk to you, the more I realize how much I don't know. It's like you don't know what you don't know, which is overwhelming for a lot of artists to have to jump in. And how forgiving would you say art directors are about, oh, if I don't understand something, or, oh, I made a big mistake? Are they patient or not?
It depends on the art director and it depends on the mistake. So like if you came in and you told me you knew how to use Photoshop and I open your file and it's just garbage, you're fired. Like, I'm not putting up with that. Like at all. There's no warnings. There's no, because time is money. And also because you're working in like a string of professionals, like you're not the only one touching the work. So if you like screw it up royally, like then it messes up with anyone else who has to touch it after you. So there's just no time to like have that.
I committed several cardinal sins. And some of you know, I made up an imaginary horror movie based on this disgusting wasp nest that I have to look at every freaking day. And Ashley has been giving me tips here or there. And I've just been messing around. I haven't done a lot of work on it. But one of the things we did was you were talking to me about trying to get the text to interact more with the image, because I feel like I was just tossing the text on and not really thinking about that. So we did this iteration where I tried to embed it a little bit more. And I had some transitions where the text sort of faded, got a little bit darker on the edge. And what did I do that just made you so horrified?
Several things. So you were editing one in a very destructive way. Like I was trying, when I got your Photoshop file and I was trying to adjust things.
You couldn't?
It was not easy to adjust. You also used the black brush to like go around your letter. I'm like, what? I can't, you completely took the editing like ability out of it when you did that. I'm like, oh no.
So it's supposed to be a form that anybody can manipulate at any stage, whether it's me, whether it's art director.
Yes. So yeah, I'm gonna teach you how to do this.
Okay. Yeah, well, see, this is where I get so scared that I'll be doing a pro gig and I'll do something like this, and they'll go, oh, I'm never hiring you again. You stink. Which they would, right?
It could happen. It depends on how nice your art is.
And we have a comment here from Ellen, who says, I love the reality check going on here. Well, that's why I wanted to have you on the stream, because you're not sugarcoating everything. You're telling me what it actually is like. And I don't think a lot of artists get to see that side of it. Mm-hmm. And we also have a question here from 7A. Have you noticed an impact in your field from AI?
Yes, I have. So have a little spiel and a few like thoughts and yeah. So I have a professor who went to Adobe Max this year. And if you don't know what Adobe Max is, it's like a big conference. It's like most people in my industry want to go to Adobe Max, and it's put on by Adobe. And so they were demoing their like AI tools, like that they're integrating into Photoshop and Illustrator and all that. And they're waiting for applause and there's just crickets. People in my field are not happy with like how far some of the program makers are really trying to integrate AI as like, because it's a buzzword right now. And unfortunately, like marketing people, business people look at AI differently than creatives do. They look at AI as in like, this is going to save us money. This could like potentially get rid of a few jobs. Maybe like a lower level marketing person could pump out some creative. And so we're already seeing like some of the effects, like a knee-jerk reaction. But I also think because AI is still in its infancy, they think it can do more than what it actually can do. And so there is some backtracking when they realize, hey, it's not going to, you know, spit out a perfect image. Like AI cannot do hands, like at all.
I can do hands. I'm a human. I know what hands look like.
But I will say, like, positively, AI can help creatives. And I have seen other creatives, and I've looked at it myself as like a good tool for ideation. It can help with ideation. Can it do the final product? No, not in my opinion. But I mean, a business person may have a different opinion than me.
I think one thing that is a positive thing is that there's real pushback on AI. For all those companies that are like, yes, AI, there's a lot of people, including myself, who are quite angry about it. And I do think it's almost an ethical choice in a way, whether you get an AI thing to happen or you hire a human. And so I'm not saying there isn't a huge problem, but I'm glad to hear that not just artists, people are starting to really value the human touch and not want something that just spits things out and scrapes from other images online. So we'll stay tuned and see how that works out. So good observation from Janice. It seems to me that graphic design and illustration are career paths, and there are specific skills, not necessarily art skills, that you need to know and wouldn't learn anywhere else but art school.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely do. I think the part that kind of like where it deviates from fine art is that you're learning how to look at things through a business lens, very specifically, and how messaging can influence a consumer. And that is like always the forefront in everything that you do when it comes to illustration and graphic design.
It seems to me that more than half the gig is the relationship you have with the art director and communication, which with technology, I think that's really confusing. So I know initially I'm emailing them, but when do you jump on a call with an art director versus them typing you feedback? And when do you ask for a call, and do they have another platform? Do they make you use Slack or?
So a lot of different companies have different messaging. They use different messaging. Some people use Slack. Some people, like a lot of gigs that I've done, I've been on like Microsoft Teams and stuff. And unfortunately, like every company like organizes their workflow differently. But when it comes specifically about like when to jump on a call versus doing an email, usually the art director is going to facilitate that for you, or a project manager will facilitate that for you. There'll be, if you're working professionally, especially like an agency gig, there's going to be a lot of meetings, and you're going to be on a lot of meetings, and some may be more relevant to you than not. But they'll schedule those things for you.
How do you deal with those relationships? Because I cannot imagine that every relationship is smooth, and it must take time to build a rapport with an art director, especially in the beginning. I know I would be very stressed out about, oh, are they annoyed with me? Do they think I'm irresponsible or something? And as you said, some art directors are tougher to work with. So how do you navigate those relationships, especially when it's not so smooth?
I would at all costs keep it professional. I think the way that you handle your responses to people matter. If someone, unfortunately, like people may not be nice to you in critique. I personally have had like business people say really nasty things about my work. that was more just like opinion than it was like, you know, giving constructive criticism. They're not required to give you constructive criticism. They can, you know, say whatever wants to go. But handling things professionally and kind of being a little bit stoic about it can go a long way Because if you're like reactive to everything, that kind of like people aren't going to put up with that.
I find keeping the emotions out of it mm-hmm. and also just being straight and to the point, because yeah. I was helping somebody the other day draft an email in a similar fashion. And they stuffed it with, oh, thank you so much. And I love your gallery and you guys are doing a great job. I was like, no, just tell me the one thing. And I don't think people realize that that is not rude. That is just getting to the point.
Yes. Yes. Time is money. Get to the point.
And I don't think a lot of artists realize that a lot of what you get is not critique. Like you said, it's just an opinion. It's like, well, I just think that's not pretty enough. And a lot of it's not helpful.
I think the funniest thing that I got told one time, I was doing an email for like a restaurant, and this is like a national chain. They told me the corn is too yellow. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
What color do you want it to be?
I'm like, you do realize corn is yellow, right?
But what do you do with that? What, did you change it purple? Or?
So, I mean, I desaturated it a little bit, and then they wanted it back the way that it was.
Oh my gosh. Well, you must have so much back and forth, and a lot of it's probably a waste of time.
That's why the non-destructive editing in Photoshop is so important, because I guarantee you someone will tell you to change something and then you show them again and they're like, no, I want it the way it was before. They'll be like, why did you change that? Like, because you told me to.
Well, you and I have talked about ways to make traditional painting flexible in that way, because I can't just change the color of this one thing without affecting other things, because you're painting over things. Whereas in Procreate, you've got layers. You can just say, oh, I want to desaturate this one spot, and it takes 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about building in flexibility with the image. Do you think that's it?
I do, yes. Because people are going to want minute changes, and then they're going to change their mind about the changes they asked for. So it's more like kind of like protecting yourself and protecting your own sanity to do it that way.
Well, let's talk about pacing. When somebody says change this, when do they want that changed by?
So usually a project manager or the art director will give you a very specific like deadline. For smaller changes, I mean, sometimes it only takes me like 30 minutes to fix something and send it back. For larger changes, I may take a day or two to like readjust. But I'm not always in charge of my own timeline.
Right. So the response time, is it always the faster the better, or do they not care?
I think if you're doing faster, sometimes you would shoot yourself in your own foot kind of thing. Like, I think doing things at a moderate pace, because if you do things too fast, then they're like, oh, well, she can get it done in like 20 minutes all the time. And so you don't want to set a precedent where you're like the fast one.
So take that time. If they say tomorrow yes. at 9, I shouldn't do it the afternoon before.
No, take it. Take the every second they give you.
But I assume that response time must be very important, that they have to feel they can get replies promptly.
As in like messaging?
Yeah, messaging.
Yes. So usually when you're doing like a pro gig, they're going to expect you to be basically on call for the business hours that you're supposed to be working. So you are expected to message back. You can't just like turn your messenger off midday and be like, oh, whatever. Because if something happens and they need it like faster, you're not going to know.
And they really don't care what else is going on in your life.
No. If If, especially if it's a big company and they say, okay, we've hired you for this job, they own you. They own you until the job is done.
I mean, it's just, I guess the way to think about it, it's not a sympathetic field. It's not where people are going to coddle you and feel patient. It's like you said, the delays become costs for your client. And I don't know, I almost find that refreshing because as somebody who's worked in the fine arts field, people are not that fast paced. They take forever and ever to get to you. And the publishing field I know is just like, takes so long to get anything. And so I'm always like, really? You get a reply to me right away. It sounds awesome. So Pat is asking, have you ever seen anyone iterate their work accurately to director notes with AI, or is it just a random change?
Iterate director. I'm not fully understanding what you're asking.
Pat, if you can follow up with a little bit more clarification, we can definitely come back to your question. And we also have a question from AA. In your field of work, what do you look for in an artist portfolio?
I guess it's different whether I'm looking in like an illustrator's portfolio versus a graphic design portfolio. So if I'm looking at a graphic designer's portfolio, I want to see variety. I want to see that they can do everything that I'm asking for. So if they say I'm a digital designer, I want to see that they can do websites and they can do banners and they can do emails and they can basically have a campaign run across multi-channels and do it seamlessly. I want to see that they can do different design styles. Like they can do simplistic and more modern. They can do things that may be a little more busy. They can do things that are more photography focused. As far as like an illustrator, I think there I might look at like consistency in style, as opposed to having so much variety. Having someone who has their own voice and their own like feeling to their illustration, I want an identity in that.
It's so funny because I talked to Kat, who was an art director at Airbnb, and she told me, she said that some art directors like the variety, that they want to see, oh, I can do portraits, I can also do props. And I'm just like so confused now because she said it's a matter of demonstrating I can do this. But now I understand as well that you don't want to be all over the place. You want some focus.
Yeah, I guess maybe I come from an older school mind where it's like the jack of all trades, but master of none. I want someone who's, if I'm looking for a very specific person, and usually like if I hire an illustrator and we're hiring them for a very specific job. So if I can look at their portfolio and see that they can do that very specific job, that gives me more peace of mind than someone who's like all over the place.
Mm-hmm. So give it to me. Looking at my portfolio, would you look at this and say, oh, this person's all over the place. They need more focus. Because I think artists struggle with that, is we need enough variety that not every single piece looks the same, in which case it seems really boring, but you also can't be all over the place. So if you looked at mine, would you be like, oh, Clara, who are you? Give it to me.
See, I think what you have going for yours is that you have like sets of images that relate to each other. And I think if you're going to do variety, showing that you can do that like specific thing multiple ways helps give a little more peace of mind. Like if I just had someone who could just showed me like a landscape and some portrait and then, you know, some food illustration, and they just had like one of each, I'd be like, maybe.
But so you're saying sets. Images,
yes.
Okay.
Sets.
Awesome. Question from Malia. Do you write creative briefs?
I have. So typically I would not be the only one writing the creative brief. Usually when a creative brief is written, it's multiple people in like a meeting or multiple meetings writing it. So you'd be working with the client, you'd be working with an account manager, you'd probably be working with like a head copywriter and someone top from creative. And of course the client having input and sitting down and kind of like mapping out the job. Like that.
Karasu's asking, how is working for mainstream companies different from working for independent companies? Because I know you've worked for huge companies, Fortune 500 ones.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things different. There, if you're working with like a mainstream company, like I've done work for Costco and I've done work for like Pier One and a bunch of other like big companies, like those companies, there's many, many people, big teams that you're dealing with. And so there's going to be more voices. They're going to have more of a structure and more of like, this is how we do things. This is what our stuff looks like. There's just going to be a lot more structure to that job. And it may be more demanding because usually in that aspect, they're working with an agency. They're paying pretty top dollar to get creative pumped out. So you're on tight deadlines. If you're working for like a smaller company, like as a freelancer, then you're kind of calling the shots. You're setting up the structure. There's more leeway kind of thing. There's more, I guess, creative freedom in that at times too.
I imagine the pay must be really different as well.
It just depends. I mean, I've had some smaller clients pay me really well. It depends on if they value creative, you know? And I've had some like big companies not pay so.
Oh, that's so surprising. I guess it's the people that work there and what they care about.
Yes, it's exactly that.
All right. So Pat is following up. If the director has a specific change, can AI artists get specific with targeting that change? Or is there a shortcoming where the AI artist is limited by what the AI software spits out?
Okay. So one, in my field, there is no AI artist. Like AI is not to that point yet where like you would hire a specific person to work within an AI framework. Two, I think that is one of the biggest shortfalls of AI is that it's not editable in a like minute fashion like that. So like if I pumped out an AI image and I said, no, I want this lighting to change, or I want this like little thing moved over a pixel, which happens. Yes, people will say move it over a couple of pixels. AI is not gonna be able to do that. And AI is kind of bound to what you're able to describe and what it has like basically tagged in its system to like relate to what you're describing, if that makes sense.
It sounds like so much of this is the back and forth, the changing, the tweaking. And so what you pass in is going to be tweaked and changed, and nothing ever gets sort of done in one go. I mean, I understand why. It's somebody who made a million mistakes. And I know for me, I was so appreciative of your feedback because it was so specific. And I felt like I didn't have to do anything. I was like, okay, I'll do that, that, and that. And whoa, it looks better. Like I didn't have to make any important decisions or question myself. And I found that sort of a relief not to be responsible for every single decision. Uma's asking, how would you work with feedback? Like, I can see it doesn't work, but I don't know what to change. How would you extract the info from your client when they help and are impatient?
Let's see. I would start asking questions like, well, is it this that you don't like? Is it this that you don't like? I'd start like picking specifically things like, is it the copy that you don't like? Is it the image? Is it the size of the image? I'd start getting like very specific to try to pull things out. And yes, some clients have like a shorter patience. So you got to try to like really direct your questions to what you're willing to change.
I mean, that's where I think the communication is everything. I know that sometimes you'll give them all these sketches and you said it's common for them to pick the worst one.
Yes. Never give one that you don't like. I've known art directors who will like put one in there to like help guide them to the one that they want. Like they'll put one that's just terrible. The client picks the terrible one all the, every single time. Do not do that.
Because for movie posters, we were talking about how at some point, a movie executive is going to look on that. And they're not artists. They have different priorities.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
So your creative vision basically is there, but you have to be willing to make those changes. Because I know sometimes, I have to say, in fine art, people really want to hold on to their artistic integrity, sometimes to a fault. But you got to throw your ego out the window for this.
Every piece that I do for a client, I am not emotionally attached to it whatsoever. I will change anything and everything about it. Like, you have to get to that point where you do not care personally about the work. Like, you care because it's your passion. You want it to be good, but it's not your work. The client is basically paying for your skill to create something for them. And you have to really keep that in mind.
Have you had illustrators just not do it? Like you give them feedback and they don't do it?
Yeah.
Yes. Why would you do that though? I don't get it. If somebody tells you to do something, do they give you a reason why they just didn't do it?
I mean, I've had reasons as I didn't want to. I didn't think that was a good change. I'm like, okay, well, give me your files and I'll do it. Goodbye.
Is that what you do?
For me, like if I'm working with someone and I have the ability to fire them, yeah. Oh, if you don't do the change and you want to argue with me, why would I keep you on?
So in the middle of the gig, you can get rid of somebody?
Yes.
Oh my if gosh. They're,
so if they're a freelancer, if it's someone who's like on staff, no, it's much harder. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
But if it's a freelancer, people let freelancers go all the time. There's no...
Yeah. I mean, there's a line around the block, plenty mm-hmm. of artists who are willing to step in and listen and be cordial and reasonable. But yeah. Like, I've never understood why you would do that. It just seems like you're totally shooting yourself in the foot.
And you have to remember, people in this industry talk. Like, it's a smaller industry than what you think. And I guarantee you, I will know someone who knows someone who's been thinking about hiring you. And I will tell them, and I have told people, do not hire this person.
In fact, it's funny that I will, on one hand, say, oh, this person's fabulous. But I'm also very likely to say, do not work with them because I want to prevent someone else with the grief. And so I don't think people understand that if you do a bad job, I will actively try to tell people not to work with you. And the fabulous thing, of course, I'll say someone's great, but I'm not as committed to making sure everybody knows. Terrible.
I mean, because if you're recommending someone, that's your reputation as well.
Yep. Small world, everybody. So everybody knows we do have openings in our workshops. We have Oil Pastel coming up this Saturday. There are still spots available. And workshops like Imaginary Landscapes, these are all in April, and there are a few spots available. We will have a Discord chat right after the stream. You guys can meet me in post live streams because I know there are other questions that we didn't get to in the stream. Join our Open Studios Club because you know something, everybody in our Discord gets one free session. And basically you get to talk to me on voice for a period of 2 hours. I mean, it's not just you, there are other people talking, but you get to talk to me on voice. And you get to make art friends and see what other people are doing, hold yourself accountable. So if you want to claim your free session in the Discord, tag me in general chat. Join our Patreon group. This is where all the cool kids hang out. I was never cool, and now I made my own cool kid group. You can share your art in weekly voice sessions. I write very long written critiques, and most of all, make art friends. Some people have met up together in person, and we just have a lot of fun in there. thank you to our top Patreon supporters. Every day I look at this list and I'm so grateful for everything you do to support us. Visit artprof.org. There's lots of content on there that is not here on YouTube. Use the search bar. Art Prof as a podcast is available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And Buddy would like for you to subscribe for more art tutorials, critiques, and business tips. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye. Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks.